and welcome to the third and final part of our exclusive interview with Wolfhew House founder, Mr. John Wolfhew. Hello again, John.
Hello, Angela, and listeners.
And we concluded part two with your impressive world tour and returned to England in 1875 when you were 53. How easy was it to settle back in after such a long time away?
Oh, not bad. It was certainly wonderful to see the children again, a year older and bigger.
How old were they by then?
Well, Louisa had turned 20, Polly was 17, Emmy 15 and Harold 11. They very much enjoyed receiving the boxes of souvenirs and specimens we periodically sent home. It was a very educational for them.
And your brother George, he'd kept the business running while you were away.
Yes, George became a full partner when we brought Brinksway Mills, and my other brothers, Thomas and Will, were managers, although poor Will had died while Mary and I were away. Oh, it was months before I even received the news. Pneumonia. He was 45 and left his wife Elizabeth with three very young children. But we made sure she was well looked after, of course.
Of course. How had the business been going?
Oh, very well. After my term as mayor had ended, we leased New Islington Mills in Manchester. It wasn't as daunting as it sounds, because we were joined by James Mayo, a managing partner. He kept an eye on things as we concentrated on the Stockport side.
And the Stockport side was also going well?
Oh, yes. George and I were still running Springmount and Brinksway Mills and took a 20-year lease on Wellington Mills.
Gosh, that's the Hatworks building now on Wellington Road.
Oh, yes. And it was a much larger complex then. A lot more than just a single mill building left now.
You were running quite a little empire then.
Well, I suppose so. Life still had its tragedies, though. Just when you think everything is rosy and... Oh. A few months after our return, our daughter Polly became unwell. We had no idea what it was and tried all we could to help her, but she died in July 1876, aged 18. Oh, at least it hadn't happened while we were away.
Oh, did you find out what had happened?
Oh, there was an autopsy. It was heart disease, but everything took such a long time. It was January the next year before we could lay her rest, and then we discovered that the nearest cemetery where my father was buried was closed to new burials. I decided to take a family plot in the borough cemetery. If anything happened to me, my family wouldn't have that extra worry.
Very wise. And an impressive monument it is, too. The lack of cemetery space inspired another venture?
Well, yes, I realised that there were many others in the area with the same problem, as a lot of the graveyards have been closed. I joined with a group of like-minded folks and we set about solving the problem with the British Heaton Orison District Cemetery Company Limited. I was one of the directors and chairman.
I suppose your business knowledge and contacts were a great help to them. This is what we now know as the Willow Grove Cemetery in South Reddish.
Yes, indeed. It was the land of the Willow Grove Estate, which was most suitable and cost-effective. It opened at the end of 77. Well, that is, the non-conformist and Catholic sections did.
Ah, you were non-conformist. Was there a particular church you were a member of?
Well, I was attached to the Baptist Church on Greek Street when we lived there in the 50s, but then I joined the Congregationalists, mainly at Union Chapel, little more, but there were others I attended and supported regularly, Wycliffe, Hanover and Wellington Road Chapel. I was the representative for the Union Chapel at Congregational Union meetings.
Oh, you seem to become an active member in most of the organisations you were part of.
Well, of course. I mean, if you can help to make a difference, make things better than when you arrived, it's your duty to do so.
That's an inspiring outlook. You were living in Heaton Norris when we last spoke, but you moved from there.
Yes. In 1879, to Woodhall, South Reddish. Large house with grounds, lot of potential. We had dealings with the owner when we were looking for the land for the cemetery, and it just got me thinking. No lease this time, though. I was able to purchase it. A secure asset for my family.
But you weren't there long before tragedy struck again.
Yes, yet again. Well, it was Mary this time. She became ill around February, and she seemed to recover, and then relapsed. It was a form of cancer. Oh, there was nothing that could be done for her. She was 56, so much left for us to achieve together, and the poor children. She died in November 1880.
Mary wrote a diary on your travels, and her entry for your wedding anniversary seems appropriate to read now, if you don't mind.
No, no, go ahead.
Tuesday, 1st of June. This is the anniversary of our wedding day, and my husband says I've been a very good little wife to him. I'm glad he thinks so, for it has been my greatest ambition to be a good wife and mother, and I've never had a thought or feeling apart from my husband's interest since I became his wife.
I was truly blessed.
I'll change the subject. You kept very busy during your political career, a councillor, then alderman, and rumours that you were going to stand as MP for Wigan in 82.
Oh yes, it seemed like a good idea at the time, the next step. I was president of the Gidlow Oil and Iron Company, so I had some interest in this area, but it didn't really work out. I soon became involved in a much larger project, a scheme to construct a ship canal from Manchester to Liverpool.
Ah, the Manchester Ship Canal. What was your role?
Well, I was one of the early advocates, a member of the Provisional Committee, director, and gave evidence to a parliamentary inquiry on the benefits to Stockport of the proposed canal.
Interesting. You must have been away from home a lot, though. Did you get much free time with the children?
Well, I didn't attend every meeting. I did have time with the children, although they were growing up, of course. We were very interested in art, myself and the girls, anyway. Emmeline showed great skill as a painter, and Louisa had a sculpture called Flowers exhibited at the Manchester Art Gallery. George Holding II also had work exhibited there, and we commissioned him to create a bust of Mary.
Oh, is that the same one here in Wealthy House? It's just outside this studio, in fact.
It certainly is. It's wonderful that she's still overseeing the activities here.
And there's one of you, of course. And was that done at the same time?
No, a few years later, in 1887. That one is by George G. Adams, more famous for statues. We, well, the council, that is, commissioned him to create Stockport's famous Cobden statue in St. Peter's Square. I was involved with that, so I took the opportunity to ask him to produce mine, too. It's good to know they're here. I donated them a portrait of Mary as well.
I'm afraid we haven't tracked that down yet. You donated it at the start of 82.
Yes, it was hung in the committee room.
Now, I'm sorry, but I will have to ask you about a more delicate matter. The breach of promise case.
I wondered if you'd mention that.
Well, I'd better explain first that breach of promise was a means of legal and financial redress for usually women who had been promised marriage, been engaged, but the partner had broken it off. Helen Ladd's, Emmeline's 22-year-old governess, took you to court under this law, stating that you'd been engaged for 3 years when you broke it off.
Well, I didn't challenge that. And the case would not have made a sensation in the papers had she not demanded that our letters be made public, purely to extract more money from me in the settlement, not to mention the embarrassment she obviously wanted to cause.
She wanted you to produce the letters as evidence.
Yes. Went all the way to the Chancery Court on a point of law. We reached a settlement out of court in the end.
Rumour had it around £300,000 in today's money.
No, I won't comment on that. Well, she did very well out of it.
3 years was a long time, and so soon after Mary's death. She was obviously a comfort to you at a bad time.
I was a fool. She saw a good opportunity.
Well, even your male critics at the Stockport Advertiser had a great deal of sympathy for you and were surprised, given your good reputation. Helen did have another brush with the law, though, a couple of years later. Her father obtained a search warrant accusing her of stealing from him, I quote, silver items, books, ornaments, bed linen and a favourite cat.
I hadn't heard that.
Well, the police didn't find anything, though.
But her father thought she had stolen from him, even the cat. I need say no more about her character.
You did eventually remarry, though. A successful artist, Susan Belfade.
Yes, a very talented lady and perfect companion. I would visit art exhibitions with my daughters, and we had displayed some of Susan's brother's work at the Mechanics Institute. Most of her family were artists. We were married in London in 1887.
So a happy ending after all. Thank you, John, for talking to us and for all your work to help Stockport people.
It's been a pleasure, thank you. And thank you to all at Wealthy House who continue the good work.
John and Susan were married for just 2 years when John became ill and died a few months later of heart disease in 1889. He was 67 and was mourned by many in the town. He was interred in the family vault in the Borough Cemetery, and even his old critics at the Advertiser described him as one of Stockport's best men.